You know, when you've invested $750 million getting ready to go into permitting, it ought to go pretty smoothly.
The Pebble Mine developers are confident their project can be approved. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 11th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a U.S. House bill that would block environmental standards for offshore drilling.
Are we going back to a time where everything is about revenue collection? What impacts could this have on safety?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Education scholarships and grants for ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, are available. To learn where the possibilities this education can take you, visit beanengineeralaska.com. This community message on Alaska Public Media comes from ExxonMobil. Energy lives here.
Ensure the vitality of public radio by including it in your estate planning. Together, we build a sustainable future for quality media. Thank you.
After being essentially stalled for the last few years, the controversial Pebble Mine proposal is gaining momentum again based on a settlement with the Trump administration. Last week, developers released a new, smaller vision for the mine in southwest Alaska. As Elizabeth Harbaugh with Alaska's Energy Desk reports, now that the Trump administration has removed a major roadblock at the federal level, Alaskans can expect a lot more action at the state level.
When Pebble CEO Tom Collier took the podium at an industry gathering in Anchorage earlier this month, he recalled a speech he gave to the same crowd during the Obama years.
I gave a detailed presentation on how we were going to win this battle with EPA, how we were going to get them off our backs and be able to go into permitting. And as I looked around, I saw a lot of very skeptical faces at the time.
But fast forward to this year, and Collier's prediction has come true. Back in 2014, the Obama administration effectively halted the project after hearing from locals worried the mine could harm the Bristol Bay salmon fishery. The Environmental Protection Agency took the unusual step of proposing steep restrictions even before the normal permitting process could begin. Pebble argues this amounted to blocking the project. But after a meeting with Pebble's Collier this spring, new EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt announced a settlement, allowing Pebble to move forward with permitting. Collier, who claims he can build the mine without hurting the fishery, aims to start permitting in December. In an interview after his speech, Collier said all Pebble needs is a chance. If the project is allowed to go through the normal process, he believes the mine will be approved.
You know, when you've invested $750 million getting ready to go into permitting, it ought to go pretty smoothly.
That's exactly what Pebble's opponents are worried about.
I didn't see it coming, you know.
Lindsay Bloom used to fish for salmon in Bristol Bay and has opposed the mine for years as part of advocacy groups Salmon State and Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay.
I thought the fight was over when EPA proposed its determination, and I thought that it would be finalized during the Obama administration.
But that didn't happen. The federal government is back to following the process Pebble demanded. So now, Bloom and other opponents are increasingly turning their attention to the state. They worry that Alaska's existing laws might not be tough enough to protect Bristol Bay's salmon.
What we've seen is a permitting process that at every turn is geared and interpreted to be to get to the yes and to get to the permit.
So Pebble opponents are trying to change state laws. Already, a judge upheld a ballot initiative that, if approved by voters, would significantly beef up protections for Alaska's salmon streams. The measure's backers say it's not intended to block projects, but an attorney for the state said building the Pebble Mine would be impossible if the measure becomes law. Opponents are also lobbying Governor Bill Walker, and he's listening to their arguments.
I'm not supportive of the Pebble Mine.
Walker said that in an interview in early October, the day before Pebble rolled out new details on the proposed mine.
When it comes to two resources, a renewable and non-renewable, I always go for the renewable, and that certainly is the fish. So I'm a fish first person, and I have been historically, and I stand there today.
Walker didn't propose any specific steps he'd take to halt the mine, but multiple state agencies will be involved in approving the project. Unlike many of Pebble's opponents, the governor expressed confidence in the state's existing laws.
You know, I don't know that there's a lever in for me to pull that's going to absolutely stop it. I think that there's a lot of protections that are already in place.
As the groups fighting the mine ramp up pressure on the state, Pebble isn't sitting idly by. It plans to challenge at least one current state law that could spell trouble for the project. In 2014, voters approved a ballot initiative requiring the Alaska legislature to approve a large-scale gold and copper mine in the Bristol Bay region. Last week, Collier announced plans to sue, claiming the statute is unconstitutional. Alaskans can expect a lot more of that back and forth as the state takes on a bigger and bigger role in deciding the future of the proposed mine. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Meanwhile, opponents of the proposed Pebble Mine are getting a boost from Democrats in Congress. 42 members of the U.S. House and Senate wrote President Trump today and asked him to overrule EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. The lawmakers, led by Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington and Representative Jared Huffman of California, say a mine would threaten Bristol Bay's world-class fishery and thousands of American jobs that rely on it. The letter comes a day after CNN aired an 8-minute story about the issue. The CNN report focused on the EPA administrator's quick decision to remove the Obama administration's protections for Bristol Bay.
The meeting at EPA headquarters was brief and to the point. By the time it ended, a mining company hoping to dig for gold and copper got just what it wanted.
CNN says the reversal came before the scientists and professional staff of EPA had a chance to brief Pruitt and directly after a meeting with Pebble CEO Tom Collier. Collier told CNN the administrator's decision was about due process, not science.
I don't have a friend at EPA. What I've got is somebody who's following the damn law.
The EPA's comment period for the proposed withdrawal of Clean Water Act restrictions ends October 17th. In their letter, the Democratic lawmakers ask for a 90-day extension. A U.S. House panel took up a bill today that would, among other things, block new environmental and safety standards the Obama administration imposed on Arctic offshore drilling. That position argued that environmental concerns and difficult operating conditions required tougher standards in the Arctic than in other parts of the country. Eric Melito with the American Petroleum Institute told Alaska Congressman Don Young the Obama administration's rule was too rigid.
So there is some question as to whether or not the additive Alaska Arctic rules were actually providing an additional benefit when it comes to safety and environmental management. So
he basically did, if I may interrupt you, took us out of the playground with those added requirements. That's what he did.
The bill would also rescind President Obama's decision putting most of the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas off limits to drilling, and it calls for a study of the inefficiencies of the two agencies that regulate drilling. Democratic Congressman Alan Lowenthal of California brought up several objections.
Are we going back to a time where everything is about revenue collection? What impacts could this have on safety?
The bill includes revenue sharing for Alaska and other states where offshore drilling would occur. This was the first hearing for the bill, which still must go before the full House Natural Resources Committee. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, permafrost buckling is causing trouble for Tununak's nearly new airport runway.
We do expect some of that to occur, particularly after we build on these types of soils. We didn't expect this level of settling.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in.
Regulators are seeking input on what could be the nation's first oil production platform in federal Arctic waters. The oil and gas company Hillcorp wants to build a gravel island in shallow waters in the Beaufort Sea east of Prudhoe Bay. The Liberty Project would be similar to several gravel islands built to produce oil in nearby state waters. The Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or BOEM, held its last hearing in Anchorage last night, asking the public to weigh in as it prepares an environmental review. Many of the speakers were from industry or trade groups. All argued in favor of the project, including Bob Stinson of Price Gregory, a company that constructs pipelines.
The Liberty Project represents a positive step towards perpetuation of the oil and gas industry in Alaska by curtailing oil production decline at this crucial time in Alaska's history.
Most of the speakers echoed Stinson, saying the Liberty Project would give a much-needed boost to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Hillcorp estimates the project would increase North Slope oil production by nearly 15%. Compared to what it's at today. But there were a few dissenters. Protesters with the Center for Biological Diversity, an environmental group, briefly held up a banner in the hallway reading, "No Arctic Drilling." During the hearing, the center's Blake Kopcho argued Hillcorp's record in Alaska should disqualify it from a project in the Arctic Ocean.
Hillcorp has a documented history of accidents and safety violations, which heighten the numerous inherent risks with offshore drilling in the Arctic.
Hillcorp was responsible for a months-long natural gas leak in Cook Inlet this spring. The company did get a vote of confidence from a top state regulator, Andy Mack, who leads the State Department of Natural Resources, delivered the final public remarks.
There's no doubt at all that the economic benefits are substantial. So I would like to thank BOEM for the work they've put in on this project. It's one of the projects in Alaska that's been studied very, very extensively, and I think that it's a good project.
The public comment period for the Liberty Project ends November 18th. Criticism of the state's new criminal justice laws has prompted officials in Anchorage to request reforms, not a full repeal. During its meeting last night, the Anchorage Assembly debated dueling measures concerning Senate Bill 91, the omnibus crime overhaul signed into law last summer. One of the resolutions asked lawmakers for specific improvements to rules that are in place or set to go into effect soon. The other resolution sought to scrap SB 91 and start over with some of the tougher penalties for serious crimes that were laid out in the original bill. That effort was led by Conservative Assemblymember Amy Demboski of Eagle River, who says SB 91 is fundamentally flawed.
Essentially what we're doing is we're taking a pile of mud and trying to turn it into an apple pie. I'm not going to pretend all these little amendments are going to fix SB 91. It's not.
The effort failed 3-8. Instead, the Assembly incorporated several amendments into a measure that's intended to instruct state lawmakers on local issues arising from parts of SB 91, not all of which have gone fully into effect. Liberal-leaning Assembly Vice Chair Forrest Dunbar says the move encourages state lawmakers to continue down the same path they've started on when they take up Senate Bill 54, the legislative vehicle for further changes to state criminal law.
I think this is a strong resolution, a strong message to the legislature that we want you to take this step, pass SB 54, and then let's talk about other issues as well. Let's talk about staffing. Let's talk about treatment. Let's talk about the bail schedule.
The measure urging specific reforms passed the Assembly 10-1. The Haines Assembly is asking the University of Alaska to press pause on a proposed timber sale, which has alarmed local residents. A couple of weeks ago, the university put 400 acres of its Chilkat Peninsula land up for bid. The timing of the sale was motivated by the threat of new local regulations. KHNS's Emily Files reports.
At a recent special meeting, assembly chambers were filled with residents who live out Mud Bay Road south of Haines. They were surprised that a timber sale of this size could be allowed in their quiet neighborhood. Here's Heidi Robichaud.
It seems unbelievably clear that the intention and all the ordinance and code around it is not to have this particular kind of development or resource extraction in or commercial use of the land in this area.
But that's the problem that triggered this 400-acre proposal. Mud Bay Zoning Code does not explicitly allow or restrict resource extraction. Borough attorneys say the general rule in regulating private property is that unless something is explicitly prohibited, it's allowed. Since discovering this apparent oversight a few months ago, the Planning Commission has brainstormed what restrictions, if any, to implement in Mud Bay Code. Rob Goldberg is the commission chair.
The public testimony, by and large, thought that small-scale resource extraction was fine. People selling a few trees or even a few truckloads of trees to support local businesses was fine. People were generally opposed to large-scale resource extraction.
But as the commission moved toward regulations on resource extraction, the Alaska Mental Health Trust and the University of Alaska objected. Both agencies own significant acreage in the Mud Bay area. The university's Board of Regents took action. They put 400 acres of land up for timber sale. The university uses money from sales like this to fund student scholarships. A couple Haines residents, including Andrew Gray, spoke in support of the university's right to profit off its land.
If you do attempt to restrict this, I just remind you that it would be an incredibly clear message to send to the state of Alaska when we are fighting for services to deny one of the state agencies who is attempting to profit off of an allowed use of their land to change the code to specifically prohibit them from doing that. I don't think that bodes well in us fighting for state services.
But assembly members agreed with the concerns of Mud Bay residents. The timber harvest seems out of character with that area. Assemblywoman Heather Lendy is one of several people who questioned whether the borough really needs explicit restrictions on resource extraction to prevent this type of sale. She pointed to other parts of code which indicate the Mud Bay service area is intended to prioritize residential over commercial uses.
An outside entity proposing a 400-acre timber sale, I don't know how that fits in with the intent of rural residential.
The assembly wants to have a conversation with the university about all of this. The group voted unanimously to request an in-person meeting with both the university and the Mental Health Trust. The assembly is also asking the university to delay awarding a contract for the timber harvest until after this discussion occurs. The timeline right now is tight. The university is accepting comments and bids on the sale until October 23rd. Assemblyman Tom Morfitt said there might be room for negotiation. He read from a letter written by University Land Manager Christine Klein.
UA advertised its Chilkat Peninsula competitive timber sale to protect our interests because the Haynesboro Planning Commission was not engaging us. So to me, that suggests that the university is maybe not in a big rush to log out there, but put forward this sale to a certain extent to get our attention.
If the university doesn't postpone the timber sale, the assembly may consider legal action. The group met in executive session with the borough attorney for more than an hour to discuss the issue. Members did not say anything publicly about what they discussed with the lawyer. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
A 26-year-old man who used front-end loaders to steal ATMs from Alaska banks has been sentenced to 30 months in federal prison. Adrian Turnbow of Anchorage also was ordered to pay nearly $453,000 in restitution to three banks and two businesses from which heavy equipment was stolen. Three people who helped in one ATM theft were also sentenced. All four had pleaded guilty to possession of stolen bank property. Turnbow used front-end loaders stolen from construction sites to remove four ATMs in December, February, and March. A security guard called police in March as a man fled after trying to take an ATM from an East Side bank. Turnbow, wearing a ski mask and carrying a loaded handgun, was arrested when the loader became stuck in a parking lot embankment.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
Raven Alaska, committed to customer safety and satisfaction, reminding Alaska that now is a great time to fly. Learn more at flyradn.com. And by GCI Business, with complete GCI data solutions for Alaska's most important organizations. GCI is your partner in possibilities.
About a year ago, the village of Tinunak opened a $19 million state-of-the-art airport, and now local airlines are refusing to fly there. The village's shifting permafrost is buckling the runway, and both Raven Air and Grant Aviation say it's too dangerous for pilots to land on it safely. Gordon Tester is Tinunak's school principal. He says the airport has been effectively shut down since last Thursday. He says community members weren't really told what was happening.
We were calling into the airlines asking when planes were going to be coming in, and we just said they're not landing till further notice. Well, then you had to ask, well, what does further notice mean?
It was only then, says Tester, that they discovered Raven and Grant had stopped flying to the village altogether. Like most Alaskan communities off the road system, Tinunak relies on air travel for many goods and services.
Well, it's impacted the community because the shelves in the store are pretty much empty. And we haven't received mail in, oh gosh, over a week.
The workaround for now is for community members to drive across the tundra on four-wheelers to pick up their groceries and mail in Tuksuk Bay. Tester drove there himself the other day to pick up some vegetables and an order of plastic lunch trays for the school. According to Tester, people have been joking about their bumpy flights in and out of Tinunak for a while now. The lower third of the runway is riddled with potholes and starting to sink. According to Department of Transportation spokesperson Shannon McCarthy, the melting permafrost may be buckling under the airport's weight.
We do expect some of that to occur, particularly after we build on these types of soils. This is very, very silty, very rich in ice. We do expect some. We didn't expect this level of settling.
It's not clear if Tinunak's old airport had these kinds of problems, but McCarthy says it still needed to be replaced. The old runway was built near the coast, and winter weather conditions made it difficult for planes to land. As far as the new airport is concerned, McCarthy says the Department of Transportation is sending one of its expert grader operators to Tinunak with construction workers to assess the situation, but their flights have been delayed by the autumn storms. Because their assessment has been delayed, McCarthy says the Department of Transportation does not have a timetable yet for when Tinunak's airport will be fixed. KYUK has begun adding to the web its self-proclaimed world's largest collection of Yupik and Chupik videos. The collection captures glimpses of nearly half a century of life on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, and for the first time is becoming available to anyone searching the web. Here's more on the story from KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur.
If you want to know how to build a traditional Yupik kayak or fish trap, you've come to the right place. Plus, there are Yupik dances from villages across the YK Delta. And creating a raincoat from seal intestines like in this video. Neva Rivers of Hooper Bay is sitting on a floor strewn with dry brown seagrass. She's using the grass to sew together strips of dried, translucent seal gut.
She's saying that we take care of everything that we're going to use.
John Active has worked for KYUK for 40 years and helped film many of these videos.
When they started talking, we tried to keep quiet so they wouldn't lose their train of thought. Because they're a lost art. They were becoming a lost art. They're a lost art now. I don't know of any elders right now who sew seal intestine raincoats.
Here's another video. This one from KYUK's Waves of Wisdom series, interviewing Yupik elders.
This is Mary Worm from Gangrenach.
we see a laughing elder in her 80s wearing large glasses and a red sweater.
And it's quite funny because she's talking about, you know, when we're young, they tell us, when you get married, I'm not going to get married. And so she's talking about when she was young, and she wasn't going to marry anybody.
She goes on to talk about children not listening to elders when they give them advice. John Active remembers doing this interview with Mary Worm at her home.
I walked into her house, knocked on the door. No answer, so I opened it, and I heard music in the background. There she was sitting in front of the TV set watching Jaws.
That's one of many videos that feature John Active himself, like this New Year's segment from the 1980s.
Burning illegal firewood brings excitement and intrigue during otherwise cold and dreary winters like we have here.
That's me very young, and I'm teaching people downriver here around Bethel how to go steal trees from upriver, because those upriver Eskimos didn't want us downriver Eskimos to go up and cut their wood.
The best time to gather these clandestine logs is at night, when most everyone is at bingo, church, watching R-rated programs on cable or satellite TV.
The video is from Frostbits. They were small segments used to fill out the half-hour newscast. TV was still new for many people at the time, and the news team used Frostbits to hook people. About 170 KYUK videos are available on the American Archive, a public broadcasting website. KYUK still has almost 3,000 hours of video to add and is raising money to do so. But money is not the only problem. Memory is another. KYUK needs your help. Over the decades, labels were lost, and we don't know who the people are in many of the online videos or where they were filmed, like this video of an elder talking about moose hunting. He says he would store dried food in the bluffs near Gwythlak, where he would sleep when hunting. It was hard work. If you want to help identify people featured in the videos, email KYUK's multimedia director, Katie Basil, at katie@kyuk.org. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Elizabeth Harbaugh and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Emily Files in Haines, and Teresa Kotsarilis and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta Subsistence Regional Advisory Council is meeting in Bethel October 12th and 13th at the Yupik Pachigyagait Cultural Center from 9 to 5. To discuss proposals to change federal subsistence wildlife and trapping regulations for the 2018 to 2020 regulatory years and other issues related to subsistence, the public is encouraged to participate either in person or by teleconference. For all information about the meetings, go online to doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. Contact the Office of Subsistence Management to receive meeting documents or to request special accommodation needs by 7 business days prior to the meeting. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.